We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Coast to Coast on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I'm Karina Mustafa alongside Calvin Wetzel, and we are into the Sweet 16 of March Madness. We're going to get into all the second round matchups that happened, as well as some first round matchups, some team thoughts, all of that, and then preview the Sweet 16 at the end. Cal, are you ready?
I'm ready. We have a ton to get into, so let's do it.
Absolutely. Our headline of the week is feels like the only really big upset that happened, but Duke upsets Ohio State. After going down 16 points, they come back, they upset Ohio State 75-63 to reach the Sweet 16. Like I said, like there have been a lot of close games, but I feel like there haven't really been a lot of like huge upsets so far, but like this one was definitely one. So what did you make of that game?
Yeah, well, first off, to your point about the upsets, it's crazy because we have so much more parity in women's basketball than we did like a decade ago or so. We've talked about this. And yet somehow this is the year that sets the record for the higher seed number of games that they won the first round. They won 31 games out of the 32 in the first round, the exception of Middle Tennessee. And 30-2 was the best record ever. Now 31-1 this year somehow. But like you said, so many close calls. You go down the list, and not even like some of those eight seeds weren't even favored over the nine seed. They were only favored by the seed line, but not in actuality, and they still won. This one obviously was the biggest upset of the second round. Duke beating Ohio State, and I mean, credit to Duke. Like they just came in and really took Ohio State out of what they wanted to do. And honestly, I was wrong because I got on this podcast last week with Danny and said that Ohio State goes as Cody McMahon goes, but Cody McMahon played really well in this game and Ohio State still didn't win. So that actually didn't pan out at all. I would have thought if you would have told me that Ohio State was going to lose this game, I would have thought that Cody McMahon would have had a pretty inefficient game, missing a lot of jumpers, but no, Cody was great. Cody was phenomenal. Duke just played one of their best games of the season. And Reagan Richardson is what stood out to me these first two games. I think she's had a lot of ups and downs offensively throughout this season, but it's been nothing but ups in the tournament for these first two games. She's been completely on fire. I think Duke handled the press so well. I was looking through Synergy. There's three times all season that a team has scored at least a point per possession against the press. The two times Ohio State played Iowa and then Duke in this game. That's it. That's how well Duke played against the press in this game. And I think that they absolutely earned their ticket to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and the game definitely started off a little bit weird in terms of their offense. But honestly, yeah, like that comeback is huge. Reagan Richardson obviously exploded for 28 points. And even on the Ohio State side, like Celeste Taylor fouled out with over like 6 minutes to go in the game. Multiple Ohio State players were in foul trouble. What do you kind of make of that? Because I know like the refs and the fouls are kind of also another hot topic in the tournament right now. But like, I feel like that just like really hurt them. Like, as you said, like you thought it would be with Cody if Ohio State lost, but Celeste fouled out pretty early there.
Yeah, playing against her former team too. You have to feel bad for her. I'm sure that was not fun. They actually had all of their starters have at least three fouls. Three of them fouled out, and that's the risk you run sometimes when you run a press. You're going to pick up a few more fouls than if you sort of sit back and on defense. But, you know, you never want to see stars foul out in a tournament setting. But
especially in what may be their last game, too. Yeah, like, I feel like there's also that. Like, it's a little bit sad to kind of go. And, you know, like, we'll talk about Stanford later, but, like, Cam Brink kind of in that same situation as well, too. Or, like, I mean, for her, it's her was her last home game, not game overall. But, like, yeah, it almost was. But, like, that would have been so weird. So, yeah, for sure. Duke plays UConn next. We now know the winner because UConn beat Syracuse. Some general thoughts on maybe UConn. They were also cutting it kind of close. Like, we've had a lot of really close games. But what are some of the keys to the game maybe for Duke or for UConn heading into their Sweet 16 matchup?
We have – it feels like we're a few buckets away from – just complete chaos and utter madness in terms of upsets. And so many of these underdogs have been right there. But in terms of Duke versus UConn, you know, I usually say that if you're going to pull an upset, the recipe for an upset is you gotta get hot from three. You got to make your threes and maybe hope the other team has a cold night. But in this game, that'll help, obviously, if threes are going down. But I think they got to win the battle at the rim. I think that's how you beat UConn. UConn, I mean, Paige Bueckers leads the team in blocks. They don't have a traditional rim protector. If you can get into the paint on them on offense, that's going to help. And on both sides, I think UConn has struggled on the other end as well when they haven't been able to get into the paint as much. And when Paige is getting in there and KK Arnold and they're making plays for themselves and for others, and then that opens up the perimeter for them and the threes do go down because when the defense collapses. So I think Duke is equipped to do that. We could see another game like the Syracuse game. I'm not sure if Duke's going to win, you know, but I think they're equipped to at least keep it close in this one. I think they have the personnel to at least hang in the paint on both sides, and that's kind of what I'm watching for in this game.
Yeah, and I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up that we have a Canadian-on-Canadian matchup in Duke versus UConn, and that is none other than Emma Cable going up against Aaliyah Edwards of UConn. I think, you know, in terms of, like, skills and all that, Aaliyah definitely has the edge here, especially, you know, she just declared for the WNBA draft as well. But I'm excited because that means at least one Canadian is making it into the next round, so a win-win situation for me.
I love on Twitter, by the way, everyone should go follow Cree on Twitter when you post just like the little Canadian flag, and every time a Canadian player does something cool, they have like 20 points or whatever. Canadian flag player shout out. It's fun.
That was me when Louisville was playing and Marissa Russell was having a good game, but then they were upset by Middle Tennessee, which is a team that we're going to talk about right now, because we're going to talk a little bit about LSU. They make it past Rice and Middle Tennessee to make it to the Sweet 16. Not without some scares, though, because both of those games, LSU had very slow start. In fact, like, they were losing. They were down at halftime. Like, Middle Tennessee was still up on them. And then, of course, LSU goes on that crazy, crazy run to just turn it into a blowout at the end there. But I'm kind of curious, Cal, like, when you look at, because they're defending champs, like, should we be worried about these slow starts as their opponents start to get a little bit better heading into the Sweet 16?
I think probably not, Maybe a little bit. I think in the first round, they kind of got lackadaisical. And you do kind of have to wonder if all of the Kim Mulkey stuff that, you know, I know a lot of us are chomping at the bit to see what that story is all about. But if any of that is distracting them at all and affecting them. But we said it. When you go down the list, South Carolina's been dominant. We'll talk about them. A couple other top seeds have not been pushed extremely hard. Notre Dame ended up, you know, maybe a little bit in the second round, but for the most part, they were pretty safe. But you go down the list of most of these top seeds, they've all been pushed at some point already in the first weekend for the most part. And so it's not like LSU is the only team that's had a stretch of a quarter or two quarters where they've looked shaky. I mean, they had a stretch of maybe six quarters where they looked shaky out of eight, but I don't know. I don't think I would be particularly concerned about the slow starts. I mean, Middle Tennessee is a good, good basketball team. Rice, maybe a different story. Like I said, I think they got kind of lackadaisical in that round. Middle Tennessee is just good. And I don't think being down to the half at Middle Tennessee is anything that you need to like raise any alarm bells about going forward. But I do think Haley Van Lith probably going to need to step up her game a little bit if they're going to knock off UCLA and potentially Iowa or maybe Colorado in back-to-back games. And I'm not even just talking about scoring. You can look at the points column in the box score. But I just think all around, I think if they're going to get to the next level, she's going to be an X factor for them in the backcourt.
Yeah, and, you know, on the topic of Haley, like, I think the trash talk would have been crazy if LSU lost to Middle Tennessee, especially because we saw Haley trash talk Louisville when they got matched up with Middle Tennessee in that first round.
Yeah, so because Middle Tennessee beat her by like 20 the year before when she was on Louisville, so she knows all about that.
Yeah, and I think if they had taken out LSU, it would have been very, very funny content. But LSU plays UCLA next. UCLA, another team, like you said, like one of the top seeds that they got tested a little bit by Creighton. They come away with that 4-point win. Lauren Betts plays in the second round game after missing the first one with a foot injury, which was announced very, very late, which I was like nearly concerned about. But it seems like she's fine. What are your thoughts on this matchup, LSU versus UCLA? Like both being teams that have kind of been tested a little bit in these early rounds, but like it feels like if you look at point differential, obviously like LSU is kind of winning that battle right now in terms of their second round matchups.
I am really glad that Lauren Betts is back for a lot of reasons. We just don't want any injuries in general. Love to see her play, but especially for this matchup, like when we get this matchup that is a gift that we probably a lot of us have been wanting to see for a long time. And it would be such a bummer to have to watch this Angel Reese and Anissa Mara front court against not Lauren Betts. That's what we all want to see. And I think it was Andrea Carter, might have been someone else who said this on in the studio or on one of the broadcasts, that Angel Reese, when she has struggled, sometimes it's been against size, and that's what she's going against with Lauren Betts. She's given up a few inches there. So it'll be interesting to see how that matchup plays out, because I think LSU, one of the things that they hang their hat on is rebounding. They're almost always the dominant rebounding team on the court, but this is the rare matchup where I don't think they're the better rebounding team in this game. And I think UCLA is going to win the battle on the boards in this game, which doesn't happen to LSU very often. It happened against South Carolina. Maybe they didn't win either of those games. That's about it. So LSU is going to have to find some other areas to, especially, you know, obviously with Lauren Betts healthy, to really win this game. I do lean LSU coming out of this one, but this is such a toss up to me. Like ultimately, I'm just excited to watch this basketball.
I feel like we're about to get more overtime games. We only had like two in the first two rounds, and now it just feels like we're inching closer and closer because these teams just seem to be getting closer and closer in terms of skill set and just like overall level.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and there's, I think five Pac-12 teams left. And so if they keep winning, at some point they're going to play each other. And you know, if the Pac-12 teams start playing each other, we'll get overtimes.
Exactly. It's a given. But that's going to be our first segment. We're going to coast through college in a little bit and talk about some more second round results and maybe some first round takeaways as well.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Okay, Cal, a lot of teams here. Where do you kind of want to start? I mean, we can start with South Carolina because that's what I have in my notes here. Defeating North Carolina in very emphatic fashion. North Carolina may as well have gone home at halftime just based on how that game went. But unfortunately, they have fallen victim to another one of South Carolina's blowout games. Camila Cardoso was back in this one after missing the first. And to me, it looks very clear that nobody is going to beat the South Carolina team.
I agree. And I think the fact that they have been able to win the way they have, and you can talk about, you know, 91-39 over Presbyterian, whatever, 88-41 over a team that played them within single digits about 2 or 3 months ago in North Carolina. Obviously, basketball is random. Crazy things happen. You can play the same team. We saw this during the COVID year when a bunch of teams were playing back-to-backs to reduce travel, and one day one team would win by 25 and the next day they'd lose. I get it. There's a lot of randomness, but I think this also, aside from that, shows the growth of this team just based on like the arc of the season. When you look at where they were at, obviously already an elite basketball team back in November when they won that game by, I think it was 9 or 7 or 8 against North Carolina, and where they're at now winning that same game by 47, they've doubled up both of their first two opponents. It's a scary prospect. Amazing. When you look at how Dawn Staley develops her players and her teams improve, not just from season to season, but within the season. And I would not want to be any of the teams in their way right now. We'll talk about the Indiana matchup, and there are some things Indiana can do, but I don't know. I don't know if I see anyone knocking them off at this point.
Yeah, and it's crazy because you watch them and they're just so cohesive as a team. Their ball movement is so good. They have so many different options of ways that they can score, and their defense has remained like at an elite level, and that's just incredibly hard to stop. Just incredibly hard to score against. And like, what do you do? Like, you have Raven Johnson, who has been incredible as a playmaker. You have Camila Cardoso, who is still dominant. Like, you have this entire squad of players that just like seems unstoppable, and they just like fit basketball wise so well. Tina Pau, obviously, like we've talked about her a bunch this year. Like, it just seems like everything fits in a puzzle that if they can't get to one player, they're gonna find another player, they're gonna find the next player, and they're gonna make a successful play out of whatever's happening on the court. And I just think that that's like the recipe to their success and what's made them just so hard to beat this season.
Yeah, the crazy thing with them is that when you think about what makes basketball teams good, you can go down the list, and I think South Carolina checks every box. And in most years, in most levels of basketball, there is not a single team that checks every box. The best team checks most of the boxes, and that's enough to be the best team. But when you think about some teams overwhelm you with talent, I think about LSU in that regard. Some teams maybe don't have the most talent on paper or the most five-star recruits or whatever the case, but they're so well coached and cohesive, and they play together as a team. And I think about like Middle Tennessee maybe in that regard. And then when you look at South Carolina, they have all the talent. They have, like you said, fit all together as a puzzle. They play perfectly as a well-oiled machine on both sides of the ball. They have the depth coming off the bench to where if one player is suspended in the first round, or if one player gets in foul trouble or whatever, injuries or whatever the case, they don't skip a beat. If they lose all their starters, they don't skip a beat next year. And it's just every single box. There's no hole in this team.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, we'll talk about their next matchup in a little bit, but going through these second round games, are there any that you kind of want to hit on, things that kind of pop out to you that you maybe want to talk about?
Well, there's a few. Before we move on from South Carolina, I do want to say, trivia question for you. Do you know the last team to beat South Carolina by double digits?
Ooh, that's a good one.
It's relevant.
I'm blanking.
It's relevant to the tournament.
Oh, really? Is it Indiana?
It is. 2019. 2019. That's how long it's been since anyone beat South Carolina by double digits. And the team that did it was Indiana. So Mackenzie Holmes, freshman year, she's the only one left from that matchup on either side. She came off the bench in that game, scored 8 points. They won by 14. So this matchup has nothing to do with that one. Obviously, the entire rosters have turned over except for Mackenzie Holmes, but I felt like I had to get that nugget in there.
We love stats here at her.
5 years. And I don't think they're going to do it again, but we'll see. In terms of That's other crazy. Second round matchups, though, let's pull up the list here. I'm very intrigued by LSU, UCLA. We kind of talked about that one and Duke, UConn a little bit, Gonzaga, Texas. So excited for that one because how cool is it?
Let's
to see?
Go Zags.
And I think, I know you're all on the Zags train with me. You stayed up. I know you usually go to bed, but you stayed up for that game last night, right? Zags.
I did. I went to bed at the end of the third quarter because I was like, they got this and it is past my bedtime and I need to go to bed. But no, I'm so happy that Gonzaga got the win. I think like they have been incredible. Obviously we've had Brenna on the pod, Yvonne Ejim, the honorary, I mean, not honorary. She is a Canadian. I was gonna say honorary Canadian, but it doesn't make sense, but I do want to honor her. That's kind of where I was going with it. They have just been like the Truong twins as well. Like they have just been so together this season. They went 30-3 in the regular season and they're up to 32 wins now if you include the first two rounds, and to get that win over Utah I think is huge for them. They do have a tough test in Texas next, who, by the way, we can talk about them too. Like, how impressive has Texas been without Rory Harmon? And it doesn't feel like a lot of people are talking about it. Like, they've just kind of been sneaking by these early rounds really, really well and in solid fashion. Like Madison Booker has just been really good for them. I'm intrigued about this matchup. I'm curious to see how the Zags do, but I thought their fight against Utah was really well and they were able to kind of sustain when Utah was getting a little bit closer in the score, and I think that was kind of the biggest thing for me. They were able to take care of business and I'm very, very excited for their next matchup against Texas.
I am too, and a clash of styles. By the way, the Zags love nothing against Utah. I love Utah. I know you do too. But you're all about the Canadians. My heart is all about the mid-majors. And to see a mid-major, what you missed by going to bed early is the scene at the end of the game with all of those fans just surrounding the players and celebrating. And the fact that they still got to host and have that moment on their home floor was so special because mid-majors don't get that very often. And for mid-major to have that on their home floor and then go to the Sweet 16, so fun. And I'm just soaking it up. But Gonzaga, I mean, obviously they don't check all the boxes that South Carolina does because no one does. But in terms of the puzzle pieces, like you said, they do. They check that box because when you go through the starting lineup, they have the passing, they have the shooting in the backcourt, they have the dominant post, they have the rebounding, Yvonne Ejim, they have the stretch four, Eliza Hollingsworth. They have all these pieces that fit together. They don't have the depth, but that starting lineup is lethal, and it'll be interesting against Texas because the Zags love to shoot it. They love to shoot the three, and they're very, very good at it. Texas shoots the three about as rarely as not off. I don't know what the word for what's the opposite of often, as infrequently as anyone in the country. Basically, Texas is allergic to threes. They're going to get inside. Madison Booker is built for the moment, though. It's so cool to see these freshmen, and we'll get to maybe Hannah Hidalgo, Juju Watkins, some of these, the freshman fire that we've talked about all year, not letting up at all when they get to their first NCAA tournament and the lights are even brighter than what they've seen at any point in their career so far. And Madison Booker is absolutely one of those on that list. And Texas, you know, we should put them on the very, very, very short list, I think, that we were talking about of top seeds that really haven't been extremely tested so far. It's not like they completely ran over Alabama or anything, but they weren't exactly pushed in the last minute or anything like that either. And most teams have been. So Texas has been taking care of business, and this is going to be, like I said, clash of styles, such a fun Sweet 16 matchup that I'm looking forward to quite a bit.
Absolutely. And let's talk a little bit about some more freshmen. I think we should talk about Stanford and Iowa State, because their game did go to overtime. And just like Audie Crooks, man, for Iowa State, obviously had a 40-point game the game before that. What a performance. That was just like, I mean, I felt bad for Iowa State, but they pushed Stanford. And like we said, Cam did foul out. But Kiki Iriafen said, I can get a 40 piece too. Watch me ball out and lead this team. And she absolutely did. And I think like I had to like go back and rewatch because I went to bed because it was past my bedtime. And I was in health and safety protocols last week, so still recovering. But nobody come at me. But this was the best game of the tournament, it felt like.
It was, and that's a high bar to clear with how many good games we've had, but I think this was the best. And I came into this game after what Crooks did in the first round, dropping 40 against Maryland, coming back from down 20, by the way, in that game we should talk about. And then obviously Cam Brink being a lottery pick. I came into this matchup very, very excited to see that battle. Audie Crooks, Cam Brink. And then what ended up happening was neither of those two. Kiki, I mean, they, you know, it showed up too, but Kiki Iriafen was out of this planet in this game. 40-something and 16, I want to say. And she's been doing this kind of thing all year. This was probably her best game of the year. But I think people who are just starting to tune into the tournament and only been hearing about Cam Brink, Kiki Iriafen is right there. And a year from now, we're going to see her in the WNBA too, in the same way that we're about to see Cam Brink. Kiki's going to be a special player. So this game was all about her to me, but also all about Iowa State, their whole entire future in their freshman class. Because, I mean, it's not just Audie Crooks either. Like, Addie Brown has been remarkable all season. Emily Ryan is not a freshman, but she's coming back for her COVID year, so she's going to be back as well. This team is going to be dangerous next year with Emily Ryan back in and all of the freshmen that they have. I think Iowa State, look out next year. This team is not going anywhere. And to see the way they battled in the second half against Maryland, and then the way that they battled or right there almost took this game on the road at Stanford was really fun. But Kiki Iriafen, just too much.
And for Iowa State, like, this gives them an incredible amount of experience heading into next year. I mean, this is like what you want for your young players, and then to have returning players as well. Like, that's just like the best formula for them to just be battle tested and all that. But yeah, shout out Kiki. Shout out Mark Schindler for writing an article about her after that game and saying that in the 2025 draft, he would take Kiki at number one. Just to kind of put in perspective, I was seeing clips. I think Alford was putting Kiki next to like Asia Wilson in like their, some of their moves. Very similar. Very exciting. Man, the future of women's basketball is pretty great. Going through some of these other games, Baylor defeats Virginia Tech, ends their season. I just want to say I was getting so mad at the camera, just like kept panning to Liz Kitley crying when the game was over. And like, I know, like, we were looking at her reactions all game, but, like, I feel like it's a bit much, especially in that moment when there's, like, a lot of emotions, especially with her, like, tearing her ACL right before the tournament and, like, not being able to play, it being kind of her last year. And so I just wanted to, like, put it out there. I was like, I don't know why we're so obsessed with, like, showing these, like, really, really, like, big emotions. So I feel like we need to be a little bit better at that. But let's talk about Baylor. What a season for them so far. Jada Walker just absolutely exploded. She was the moment for Baylor over Virginia Tech. I mean, I have no words. Like, she was just, you texted me after the game and you're like, we're just going to talk about Jada Walker for 29 minutes and 1 minute on everybody else, because holy moly, what a performance.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to dismiss everybody else. It's been a fantastic story. But Jada Walker, this is what March is all about, because I love talking about the stories that we're going to get to continue to hear for the next couple decades, too, because they're going to be around forever, like Kiki Erhoffen, who may or may not go number one and is definitely going to go high in the draft. But how about also the stories of people who casual fans have never heard of, who maybe aren't an All-American, but who have their March moment and just absolutely explode and sometimes outduel some of those players who are much higher on the radar. And I think Georgia Amore is someone who I've loved watching her play for the last few years, and she's been a phenomenal talent. She's going to get drafted, I don't know where. And Jada Walker just outdueled her in this game. Jada Walker averaging, I don't know what, 7 points a game this season, and came into this game and just out-battled Georgia Amore from start to finish and dropped whatever. I don't even know how many she had. I lost track. But at the end of the game, I mean, this is not who you have circled on Baylor's scouting report as your go-to. But by the end of the game, it was so clear when Baylor was trying to protect this lead and Virginia Tech was trying to stay connected.
She had 28
Baylor
points, by the
was
way.
Giving the ball to Jada Walker, that because she was it in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And even before we move on, also just shout out to Clara Strack for Virginia Tech for just kind of stepping in for Liz Kitley. And she did great. Had 18 points, 10 rebounds. She's going to be good. She was battling hard. And like, that's kind of also the part of March where like you feel for these teams that fight so hard and come up short. But that's just kind of how the month goes. It's kind of how the tournament goes. And there's a lot of emotions circling. Looking at some of these other games, Colorado plays Iowa next. We're going to talk about that soon. Oregon State defeats Nebraska. They have been very exciting in the second half of the season. How do you kind of rate this game? And like, maybe even more on like Nebraska's end, like how would you rate their season and how do you kind of feel about that loss?
Well, for Nebraska's side, I think they got nothing to hang their heads about. Like, you know, we talk about them on this pod a lot, and that team has accomplished a lot this season and that I think they can be proud of. They beat Iowa. They almost did it again. They're a few minutes away from a Big Ten championship. They got back to the tournament for the first time in quite a while, and they won a tournament game. So when you look at this team going forward, yes, they lose Jash Shelley. That's a huge part of what they do. But the front court, Alexis Markowski, Natalie Potts coming back, Allison Widener should be back from injury next year, and then Britt Prince, high-level recruit in the backcourt coming in that I think can step in right away and replace some of Jash Shelley's production. So I don't think this team is going anywhere either in the same way as Iowa State. I think Nebraska is going to be forced to be reckoned with going forward as well. On the Oregon State side, though, because that's what this is all about, the team that punched their ticket to the Sweet 16, like you said, second half of the season, they have been a story. And I think what's been really cool for me to see is Tamia Gardner coming on so strong compared to where she was at in November, December. And, you know, they put her in the starting lineup a month ago or so when Reagan Beers was out. And then Reagan Beers came back. They took her out. And then they put her back in the starting lineup next to Reagan Beers. Now they're playing them together, which I think has been working great because Gardner is such a good shooter that doesn't muck up your spacing at all. You put those two together and Gardner can still step out. She might be the best shooter on the team. But also it just adds rebounding when you have both of those two next to each other. And it's really tough rebounding against that team and defensively as well. So that team has been stellar defensively. That team is, I think, going to be really tough for a Notre Dame team who's missing Kylie Watson on the inside to handle in the Sweet 16. I think that's going to be a tough, tough matchup. And their run might not be done yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Let's look at some of these other games. You mentioned Notre Dame. They defeat Ole Miss. They wrecked them. Hannah remains a star, producing very, very highlight-worthy plays. Let's see. NC State defeats Tennessee. We got to talk about that. That is just a gut-wrenching end of season for Tennessee. And if you saw their coach, Kelly Harper, she wears her emotions on her sleeve. Her reactions are just, I feel like you could just make like so many memes out of them, but like you really, really felt for them when she was just like pleading with the ref in that like weird moment at the end where like it looked like Tennessee was going to get the steal and like something was going to happen and the refs called the timeout. And then she's just kind of like, basically was like on her knees, just like, please, you can't do that. But like, you feel for them. You feel for Rekia. NC State, though, what a season and what a performance to take Tennessee out like that. Cal, any thoughts on that matchup?
I just think, NC State is basically playing the way that they were in November right now when they burst onto the scene. And I believe they were unranked preseason. Maybe they were,
I think they
24th, 25th. I don't remember, but they made their way up to where'd they get to, third, I want to say, really quick in the season. This was one of the stories of the first few weeks, and they beat UConn and all of this. And the way that they've been playing here this last week or so is they're right there. So I feel for Tennessee too. Like to add this on top of what happened against South Carolina for them,
it's
a lot. It's the emotions of March. It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot. It's that dichotomy we've talked about, but it's NC State. Saniah Rivers has been it. And she's stepped up for them big time. So I'm looking forward to see what they can do against Stanford.
Yeah, that's going to be a really good one too. Some of these other matchups, Iowa defeats West Virginia, but like barely. it feels like they also got a little bit bailed out by the refs at the end there. Another one, Indiana defeats Oklahoma. That was a close one. That was a really close one until the end. That was a good end of season for Oklahoma. They showed some really exciting stuff. Like we mentioned, Mackenzie Holmes for Indiana has been crushing it. Very curious to see how her and her team does against South Carolina in the next round. And then we talked about the Zags. USC defeats Kansas, although that one was a close one for a lot of the game too. Like I just feel like we are going to get some really, really close games in the Sweet 16. And things are just going to get crazier and crazier. But did you have any kind of like last thoughts on the second round matchups that happened or any like first round matchups as well?
Well, with Indiana, it's so good to see Mackenzie Holmes healthy after she was, you know, a little bit banged up and barely played in that Big Ten tournament. And that was the difference for them. Oklahoma, no one's ever accused them of being good at post defense. And Mackenzie Holmes dropped almost 30 in this one. But Oklahoma, like you said, had a great season. If you would have told them that they were going to be right there almost in the Sweet 16 after they lost Southern, I think they would have signed up for that. So yeah. Indiana, great win. And USC, Juju, what can you say? I'm with you that so Kansas made a little run in this game. Obviously, I think they went zone for a while, and USC pulled away at the end. But we're gonna see more and more of these games where the underdog makes a run and the underdog's hanging around. Except the underdog might actually come out on top this time because now the underdogs are the 3, 4, and 5 seeds, and not the double digit seeds are not the 8 and 9 seeds. And so as we get into these next couple rounds, these games are going to be wildly entertaining. And Iowa, West Virginia, like it's another one that when you talk about that emotional dichotomy and how you feel so bad for some of these teams, West Virginia, Feel so bad for them. They battled in this game. Absolutely battled. They showed up to play. And in the first half of that fourth quarter, when they went on that 10-0 run and tied it, you feel like this team had something going and no one was backing down on defense. And sometimes stars get the calls. That's how basketball works. I don't like it. Obviously, Caitlin Clark is one of those players who's going to get the benefit of the whistle, whether it's right or wrong. And she certainly did last night. Iowa certainly did down the stretch of that game. That's part of home court, and that's part of having a star. But I would love to see the officiating more fair and more balanced, because I think West Virginia had a gripe on some of those. But that's how it goes. Now we get neutral sites for the rest of the tournament, so we'll see how that goes with the officiating.
Yeah, and I know that's been a huge debate as well on Twitter about neutral sites versus home games and reffing and all of that. But yeah, it's getting maddening. I was gonna say like crazy March Madness maddening. I don't know. It worked. It kind of didn't work, but there were a lot in there. It's fine. I'm just throwing words around. That's what podcasters do, right? But anyway, there's a couple of first round stuff that I did want to mention before we go to games to watch. In that first round matchup between Oklahoma and Florida Gulf Coast, the last play, and I should have clipped it for our YouTube viewers, I laughed so hard because they just did the thing with the players where they were just like circling around.
Just played like ring around the rosy or something.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, and I think Sue Bird tweeted, she was like, if coaches don't add that to their playbook, then what are we doing here? I thought it was hilarious. So I did want to give that a mention. Obviously, we talked about Audie's 40 piece.
I think they will, just to butt in, but coaches steal from each other all the time, as they should. And Carl Smesko is a coach who people should probably be stealing from. So I'm looking forward to the next time we see that play, because it's going to show up somewhere.
That was so funny. That was so incredible. Looking forward to more funny plays like that, to more overtime, as long as it's not like after midnight. But a lot of really good and exciting.
Hey, sign me up.
Yeah, I mean, you're in Central Time, so it's a little bit easier for you.
I have an easier road, but when we get good basketball games, and I know people on the East Coast and people who don't stay up as late, like it can be rough. I get it, but for me personally, like I'll stay up till 3 a.m. if we have good hoop. I don't care. Like I'm not trying to end elite high level basketball. You know, like. Sign me up for as much of it as I can get.
That's fair. That's so fair. All right, let's get into our Sweet 16 matchups to watch. I'm going to start with Friday's games. The first matchup is Oregon State versus Notre Dame at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Keys for this game, I feel like number one is just like Hannah Hidalgo. Very excited to see her. But what are you looking for in this one, Cal?
I think if Notre Dame wins, it's going to be Hannah Hidalgo, and it's going to be the backcourt. And if Oregon State wins, it's going to be the frontcourt, like we talked about, shorthanded for Notre Dame. Oregon State's frontcourt has been great with Reagan Beers and Tamia Gardner, and Oregon State's definitely going to have the advantage on that side. I have Oregon State in my bracket for that reason, but every time I watch Hannah Hidalgo, I sort of feel like I regret it. So we'll see. And they certainly have the best player on the floor. Nothing against Talia Von Ohlhoff and Reagan Beards or anything, but Oregon State is going to have a size advantage and a rebounding advantage. So it's going to be a very, very tight game. This is one of the, I think, better matchups just in terms of how many different ways this could go in this round.
I love it. So there's Oregon State versus Notre Dame. Then afterwards, the one thing I will say that I would love is like about the later rounds is like the games are much more spread out and we can just watch one at a time, because watching 32 games in like 24 hours was just like 48 hours or whatever it was, like That was a lot. I will say that was a lot. And I'm like also a tennis fan, and I feel like it's so much easier to watch the first few rounds of like a Grand Slam when there are like a million tennis matches on than it is to watch like a million basketball games on. For some reason, it feels like so much harder to keep up with, but it was fun. It was fun, but I'm tired and I would like to watch just one game after another, if that's okay with everyone else.
Yeah, it's I have all my screens going and I still, you just can't watch them all. Like I have a game over here on a screen, but then I'm watching the one that's in the last minute and it's tied over here. And then I miss something crazy that happened over here in the second quarter.
And, yeah.
You know, you got to go back and watch stuff, but we all miss stuff all the time, but not anymore. Are we going to have one game at a time or are we going to have two games at a time? Now, I haven't even checked the time schedule yet, actually.
It'll be one game. I have the schedule on right now. So Oregon State, Notre Dame is at 2:30 on Friday. And then Indiana versus South Carolina is next at 5 p.m., which is like more than enough time in between games, which is great. We kind of talked already about Indiana and South Carolina a little bit, what we're looking forward to. I'm curious, like, actually, maybe I'll save this for next week's podcast. If like, which team do you think has like the most like chance, the biggest chance at like being the team that upsets South Carolina, if there even is one, or if everyone's just kind of battling to lose to South Carolina?
You know, well, yes, everyone is mostly battling to lose to South Carolina, but it's like, we've seen South Carolina tested a few times. It's not a 0% chance that someone knocks them off on their best day. Like last year, I didn't really think anyone was going to beat them either, and someone did. This year's team's probably better, and they're harder to beat with the shooting that they have. But in terms of who has the best chance to beat them this year, I think it's probably LSU. I don't think LSU is the second best team, but I think LSU is probably the best equipped to do it. And the fact that the team that I think is the best equipped to do it has had two chances and still hasn't done it tells you that it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
But it might.
It might. It's March. Never know.
Who knows?
Or we'll be in April at that point, but we'll see. All right. And then next after Indiana, South Carolina at 7:30 p.m. Eastern will be NC State versus Stanford on ESPN. I only have one question for this one. Do you think it's going to go into overtime? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, moving on. And then at 10 p.m. Eastern, because of course it is the late game, we have Gonzaga versus Texas. And of course, I will be staying up for it. I know you will be staying up for it as well, Cal. It's a Friday night. Nobody has any excuses. The next day is Saturday. So make sure you stay up to watch all of those. We already talked about their matchup a little bit too. But those are the four games on Friday. And then let's move on to Saturday. The first matchup, and the nice thing about Saturday is we get some afternoon games. At 1 p.m. Eastern is LSU versus UCLA. Then followed at 3:30 p.m. Eastern will be Colorado versus Iowa. Let's talk about them for a second because I feel like we didn't talk about those two teams too much yet. What are you expecting in this matchup? And could an upset be brewing with Colorado potentially being able to knock off Iowa?
It could. You know, this is a rematch of last year's Sweet 16, and the upset didn't happen, but Colorado was leading at halftime. They hung around for a while. Iowa ended up pulling away towards the end. Colorado dominated them, absolutely dominated them on the glass. Wasn't even close. Quay Miller, I believe, had 13, 14, 15 rebounds, something like that. And that's something that I think we can look for again. I think Colorado is going to have the advantage there. Obviously, that's oftentimes not enough to beat Iowa when Caitlin Clark makes a bunch of logo threes, which she will be doing. So we'll see, but this isn't going to be a runaway by any stretch. Colorado certainly has the capability of doing this. Jalen Sherrod is a tough guard for anyone on Iowa. I'm sure Gabby Marshall will be on her, and I think Jalen Sherrod's going to be getting into the paint, making plays. So
she's ready. She tweeted out a smiley face as soon as Iowa won yesterday. So
yeah, she's ready. And, you know, this is for the most part the same Colorado team that hung around with them last year in that Sweet 16 game. Sherrod, Quay Miller, Aaron Vonleh were all starters on that team, but you know, Caitlin Clark, there's not that much more analysis that you need on Iowa's side, honestly. Like, when you have Caitlin Clark, you're the favorite in almost every matchup. You're not going to be the favorite if you play South Carolina, but Iowa is favored here, and I do think they'll win in the end. I think it's going to be a good game. Colorado's going to make them sweat it out, though.
Yep, I definitely agree with that. And then coming up at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, we'll have Baylor versus USC. Very excited to see who pops off in this one. Or can Juju lead USC to the next round? And then at 8 p.m. Eastern, we'll have Duke versus UConn. Thank God there are no 10 p.m. games, because I don't think I could do that two nights in a row. I can go to bed at my bedtime. But any kind of thoughts on Baylor USC or Duke UConn that we haven't already talked about?
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of the players on these teams already. But I should just, you know, before we get out of here, say that it's really cool to see Paige Becker sort of recapturing the magic of her freshman season. I think Paige is on another level right now. And Ashlyn Shade, someone too for UConn, who has been popping off so far in March. And
freshman really, fire.
Yep, freshman fire. There you go. Another one who we need to get in there. So Duke's going to have their hands full trying to guard that UConn team. But it's just an unbelievable slate of games on both days. And can't wait to watch that one. Can't wait to watch Juju versus Jada Walker. I tell you what, Jada Walker, she out-dueled Georgia Amore. If she can out-duel Juju Watkins, a top two or three player in the country, I don't even know what to say anymore. Like, Jada Walker is an absolute March icon if she can somehow pull that off, because Juju is, almost no one can out-duel Juju Watkins.
All right, you heard it here. Watch out for the Baylor Bears as they take on USC in the Sweet 16. That's all for us on Coast to Coast. You can find us on social media at Her Hoop Stats, myself at KrinaMM, Cal at CWetzel31. Make sure you're subbed to Her Hoop Stats wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure you're subbed on YouTube so you can see our wonderful reactions when we talk to each other. And we will see you next Tuesday.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.